We're going to continue in lesson two this morning on healing a wounded spirit. And this time we have an outline. We didn't have an outline last time, and we've got what we covered last time and some new material. I appreciate everyone's participation. And I want to continue to say that this material is material that I've taught for 30 years. This is material that I've used in home studies. I'm trying to revamp it and put it together. But as I found it very, very practical in my own life. And so whatever I'm teaching, I'm going to be teaching from the standpoint of what the scriptures teach. But also, it has profited me greatly. One of the things that is important to understand is that at times when we're hurt and we have emotional times in our lives, it becomes very difficult to think. And really, preparing yourself for that emotional time is the essence of biblical faith. I've got an article in the Beacon today about, is it okay to be mad with God? And it really deals with the idea of really the concept of who God is and who we are and how unfair things happen. And there's a preparation ahead of time before the event that we can have to know how to deal with unfair situations and hurtful situations. I do know that if we lose the battle for the mind, which we began last week talking about, if we lose the battle for the mind, bringing every thought into captivity to Christ, that the end result is tragic. I believe that Satan's greatest weapon is the poisoning of the mind. And I think if you study the works of the flesh, you'll find how that works, whether it be bitterness, whether it be worry, whether it be carnality. As you'll find in Romans, again, we didn't use these verses last week, but you'll find the idea of God giving people up. And there's the idea, you go back to Romans 1, 20 and 21, they didn't like to have God in their thoughts. You can push God's way out of your thoughts. And eventually God will let you do that, and you'll go further down a path of self-destruction where in many ways you're like a crazy person doing terrible, hurtful things. But you think they're good. And so there's the dark side of it. We don't want to get caught in that situation. But the other thing that I really want to emphasize this morning, and we'll be getting in, of course, actually we didn't cover these verses last week, but this was the introduction I had in mind last week. We need to understand this, brethren. Our hearts, if they're not under control of God, is very deceitful. What do we tend to do with ourselves? What do we talk about our natural tendency? If we see somebody doing something and we do the same thing, what's our tendency? We might be critical of that person doing it, but when we do it, what would we tend to do?
Justify.
Yeah, we tend to justify ourselves. We really do. And so you'll find a passage like Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Well, here's the answer, verse 10. I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his way, according to the fruit of his doing. And so one of the things we really, really need is a humility to say, Lord, I need you. Lord, I could be wrong. Lord, teach me. Don't let me go down a path where my head is lowered and my eyes are shut, and I'm going down a path of self-deception. And I will tell you, that's the thing that destroys Christians. That kind of situation, more than anything in my experience of people that I've known, is when people lose control of their heart and they lose sight of reality. Hurts can make us do that, can lead us in that way, but God can help us. And therefore, we read 2 Corinthians 10 last week. We want to bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. And so we talked about how it's very, very important to let our thoughts, and this is last week, let our thoughts be under the control of God. Now, this is where we finished last week, and I want to start back here. This is something we ought to start on every day. One of the first things when something tragic happens and my emotions are stirred and I'm becoming suspicious of others or I'm worried about what's going to happen and I think the sky is falling and the world has come to an end. Yes. We all have those occasions, you know, our emotions are running away with us. First off, I want to turn to God and ask for his help. And say, Lord, help me to see. And one of the first questions I ask is this. here are things in my life, and I say, Lord, what can I do? And what do I need to accept that I cannot change? And what do I need to give to you? That's what we talked about last week. This may say, oh, that's oversimplistic. Brethren, this is some of the most critical decisions we can make, and it's not always easy to see when we're going down the wrong path in this area. A verse that we would do well to memorize is Matthew 11:28-30. I've come to appreciate this more and more and more. When we talk about life, we can, if we take on things we cannot change, what happens to us? Let's say there's something in the past. By the way, any of them ever changed the past? I haven't. But there's this past event we can't let go of. And we can imagine, if only I had done this, or if only this person had done this, and if it hasn't happened, it worked out this way. And we spend all this time and all this effort thinking about it. What happens to us in our spirit when we spend effort and energy on things we cannot change? You feel good about it? You have extra energy from that? Does it give you optimism to go ahead with the future? It doesn't. You end up with a very awful burden. And I will tell you, as you deal in life, sometimes people give you burdens you can't bear. You know who most of all give you burdens you can't bear? You. I'm trying to teach us how we don't have to take on certain burdens that somehow in our training we think we have to. So notice Matthew 11:28. Come to me, all you who are labor and are heavy laden. Here's this person. Oh. Now, what's Jesus going to do for us? And I will give you rest. Now, the burden is likened us to a yoke. Verse 29, take my yoke upon you. So, notice where he's going to take our yoke. He gives us a yoke. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. One of the hardest things we have to do in life, and I'm telling you, I'm saying this for every one of us, is learning how to take a burden that we don't want to let go of, but it's something we cannot change, and learning to take that off us and give it to God, and take on to God like He says we can do. That is an enormous challenge we will face every day in our life. Yes?
Just to note, because if we don't, then it's, if we forget God in that and try and struggle with it ourselves, then it's us against our fears. Yeah. Continually, without God's help. And Satan's there to try and win that battle without God's help. But the key point is, if we forget God, we're not going to overcome.
See, Satan's got the world. He wants us. He'd like us to deny God and go live like the world, but we know enough we're not going to do that. Okay, if he cannot destroy the Christian, you know what plan two is?
Those he cares about in the world around him.
Yeah, he ends up overburdening us and make us ineffective. If you take a batter and you take the two poles of the battery, I don't recommend to do this at home or anywhere else, but you take this, say, jumper cable to the battery and you put the two ends together, the jumper cable, what does that do? You get heat and light. You may hurt yourself in the process. And you do that long enough, what does that do to the battery? It burns itself out. You can burn out your heart. You can burn out your insides and become ineffective. And even worse, you could end up hardening your heart and going in a bad direction. These are big deals. These are really big deals. Matter of fact, these are such big deals, I think this destroys more people than false doctrine. Is when we do not learn how, because in time we get too big, we take on the things we cannot change, we create a big, big mess. And so notice, we've got to come to Jesus, we must learn from Him, we must give up a yoke, and take a yoke, and we've got to keep doing it the rest of our lives. Again, this is one of my favorite verses. We dealt with it last week, but I want to deal with it again because it was a turning point for me in preaching. When I first started preaching, I told you, I was at a little work in Birmingham. We had 20, 30 baptisms in a 2-year period.
And our attendance was going up. We'd met in this little trailer, and we was packing that trailer. And I was really excited about that. But you know, one of the problems I had is that I started thinking I had to make people attend and make people obey the gospel. You may say, well, yeah, maybe you want people to attend and obey the gospel. But let me show you what I mean.
This verse here. When you talk about the work of God, in 1 Corinthians 3:5, it says, who then is Paul and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believe, as the Lord gave to each one. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Now, if we're talking about building up people, making people Christians, or allowing Christians to grow, what are the two realms that men have here in this verse? Paul did what? What did Apollos do? Now, who made the increase? No, preacher did that, didn't he? You see, one of the things that it was very useful to me to learn is that God gives me a realm. Yeah, there's a realm you want to go through when somebody's not attending, when somebody's not doing right. But again, there's a realm. And I took it on personally, and I was miserable in services. I'd see not all the people that were there, but the people that weren't there. And it was driving me crazy, and I was making a mistake. Fortunately, I learned from that. Again, we talked about that last week, and we'll move on to new material now, but this is so important, I don't mind talking about it every week, to be honest with you. What are some things we cannot change? Can't change the past? Can't change?
Others.
Can't change others, that's my biggie. That's the biggie for me. I can't change others against their will. I can't change Bryce. I can't change Yvette. Yvette can't change me. You know? That's really important. I'm going to talk about that now in marriages. That's where we left off last week. We can't change, you know, what's right, what's wrong. We can't change death. Let's talk about marriage. Talk about that a little bit. It's interesting in marriage of how opposites attract. That might not be true in your marriage, but probably it is. Certainly men and women are different, aren't they? And it was interesting studying personality type before Yvette and I married. I came to realize that, whoa, we go about how we think very differently. There was one lesson where a lady was talking about a man who had this personality type that he planned his whole day out where he would not take a left-hand turn. And I laughed at that. I was thinking, oh, look. And the event got real quiet. And I looked over there and said, have you done that? And I was thinking, oh, okay. Life is going to be interesting, you know. And so here, the event is neat and organized, a perfectionist. And every now and then I make a mess. I may not notice that. I might not be the most organized person. Is there going to be conflict? Now, let me make it clear here. Let me make it clear. There were some changes that I needed to make. There were some changes that Yvette needed to make in there. Very little. I needed to make most of it. But what is the right way and the wrong way to create change in your marriage? Could we take 1 Corinthians 3 as an example? Wouldn't that be an application? One of the worst things that a person can do is to try to force your mate down a path. Now, understand what I'm saying here. I'm speaking of wisdom. Should someone change for their mate? Yeah, if it's right and good. Yeah, I need to change. I know that. But there is a path from which you are going to try to cram something down somebody's throat and through strong-arm tactics make a person go in a direction, or there is a path from which you can plant seeds, communicate, be patient. I'm going to tell you, in marriage, it's very good for you to learn about your mate and their strengths and weaknesses and how to help and motivate them, where they are willing to go forward. And that's true in the local church. I'm telling you, in the work of evangelism and our work in the local church, the same strategy is used, is that what we want to do, we want to teach right, we want to encourage. Yes, there's a time for rebuke.
But I've learned in life that it takes each person individually to make up their mind that they're going to change. And they have to be given ability to do that. How can I put it? Let God make the increase? Are you following me? I'm not giving you the how-to in every aspect of marriage or evangelism here, but this is a critical principle. When you get in a situation where you are trying to force a change, you may find yourself in a very disappointing situation in a relationship that comes pretty miserable. So just some thoughts here. Again, I'm planting seeds. So let's... Any comments on that? I know we talk about marriage. Yes.
Some of y'all are probably familiar with the book, The Challenge of Being a Wife. It's an old book, and it's still so good, and a lot of us still use it in our marriages and helping others with marriage. But one of the things I take away from that book most of all is that, you know what? Whatever your marriage is like, you are responsible for you. Yes. You're responsible for what you're supposed to do. You look at what God wants you to do. That's what you do. And regardless of what your mate does, you do what God wants you to do because that's what you have control of, which is essentially what you're saying. And it was really helpful. It's a really good book.
You try to equip others to help them make change, to help them want to change, to help them be equipped to change. And let them, they'll never make that. Now, it's not the same thing on parent-child relationship, but eventually it becomes that too. Eventually you want to equip your child to be able to make changes. It's not an exact parallel here. There's an illustration I heard years ago about a man whose wife was, I mean, whose fiancée was always late. And he was led back into depression, and he, you know, actually somebody, he told this story 50 years later. They'd been married happily for 50 years, and he told the story about how they were walking to town. People didn't have cars back in depression, not many. And they saw this little ad, this little billboard about a play, and it was going to cost a quarter, which was a lot of money, and she seemed to really want to go, and so he says, okay, we'll go to this play under one condition. When I come to pick you up, you've got to be on time. Oh, I'll do that. So he put out the 50 cents, got the tickets, and showed up for his wife-to-be, you know, it wasn't the house of the mother-in-law to be. And you can hear her scurrying upstairs, and the mother-in-law came down, I don't think she's going to make it. And sure enough, you know, he told me, if you're not ready at 7 o'clock sharp, I'm going to tear the tickets up. At 7 o'clock sharp came. He took the tickets out, looked at them, and he says, you know, I've got a wonderful, you know, girl, fiance to be, wife to be. She really wants to go to this play, and she's really got a struggle when it comes to this area. There's going to be some things here there's some things I cannot change that I'm going to need to learn to accept and work with. So he didn't tear up the tickets. Ended up, I think there was a power failure that night. The play was postponed to the next week. And so they ended up going on time later and doing it. But I think that's the principle in life. Wouldn't we love to change others? Wouldn't right now, wouldn't it be good if there were some people that we could make different? Know your limits. And when you cross that border, you're going to find yourself miserable when you take on things that are God's.
Now, let me go further. Let's talk about repeating patterns of failure. One of the things that, brethren, for us, we might be in a repeated pattern. Okay, yes.
Before we leave that topic, I was just thinking about how in our life is family relationships that are going down paths that are not in line with Scripture, and where you draw hard lines of fellowship, where you teach hard, where you have forbearance, those types of things. But then my mind also went to, you know, when withdrawal is required, that's God's wisdom.
That is.
And it is most of the time opposite of our wisdom.
Yes.
And that gives it's hard to make that decision and go down those paths because that's not what you would think would be the best thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's something that God has directed for us to do. And
excellent point.
That's the part where somebody has planted, somebody has watered. But you have to do what you're supposed to do based on what God's told you to do. while he gives the increase. And
yeah, we better be planning God's work. Because what you're talking about here is exactly what God would want you to do. The easy yoke. If there's a place for withdrawal and separation of fellowship, that's part of the easy yoke. And so, yeah, so we don't want to sometimes change the seat. We'll get in trouble there. But that's a good point. Because really, ultimately, God will bring a change. At their times, some stronger measures are required by Scripture. And we don't shortcut that. Because what's happening, they might say, we're taking out, we're now making, hey, but Lord, you said do this, but I'm smarter than you. I can break the increase. And so what we're doing there, when we go against an obviously thing that's revealed the will of God, now, of course, our part is having the judgment to know exactly if we're applying the will of God correctly. Yes?
Just to know, God, in his infinite wisdom, he knew about tough love before we ever coined the phrase.
Yes.
It's true.
Yes. Okay. Good points. Good points. And by the way, this actually falls right into this other area, too. You know, people get caught in repeated patterns of failure. I'm serious. And for their whole life, they do the same thing over and over and over and over again. And they get bad results. And they keep doing it. And sometimes it goes through generations. Sometimes we'll see family members, you know, going down paths and you're like, they're going to destroy themselves. And they won't let us talk to them. Isn't that interesting? Sometimes, you know, they know where we stand and they're going to get up. And, you know, what do you do in a situation like that? By the way, unless there's some specific instruction of God, if I'm in a local church or if I'm in some relationship where I have to go to see that person, sometimes there are things outside the realm where the door is closed, the door is shut, and there's nothing I can do except pray that maybe life will beat it out of them. This house. So sometimes consequences that they might crash and burn and learn. But not everybody learns.
The fool is described in Proverbs 27:22. Though you grind a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. Sometimes people do things that to those with wisdom say, man, you know, this is not going to work. And they keep doing it. And so that's why we need to understand ourselves and above all be teachable. We all come from different backgrounds. And we can't change our background. We can't change the home we came out of.
We may have had godly parents who did their best and made mistakes. Okay? So I'm just saying that we all would come out of homes with it. There would be some things that were not ideal.
But one of the things that I see many times when I see a repeated pattern of failure in a large percentage in my experience, that it comes from what has been taught in the home. Alcoholism, for instance. Alcoholism and addictions oftentimes go back to people dealing with anger and depression and trying to medicate themselves to kind of deal with the pain of that. There are exceptions to that. And many times in an alcoholic home, particularly when you have anger, you don't learn to communicate. Anger shuts down communication. And you learn to bury your hurt, and it ends up you get another generation of people that don't know how to interact and communicate. Whether or not there's alcoholism or whether or not there is addiction involved, sometimes divorce, coming out of a divorce home. Some people can be totally innocent and godly. But many times you come out of homes, you can be a faithful person to come out of a very difficult home. It's interesting, Dwayne Moyer, who is with us for the meeting, I got to talk with him at length. He had a very difficult, extremely difficult background. And it was very interesting to talk with him and see how he's moved ahead. But one of the things that's important to understand is that oftentimes the communication process, the thought processes, how you work through problems or don't work through problems, work through life, you have some programming from your background and from your home. And what I'm just saying is that, okay, be teachable. If you come out of a situation where there's been divorce, you're more likely to have divorce. I'm just speaking statistically. Now, that can be overcome. There can be, but you've got to be willing to be taught. Let's go back to those that you want to help, they won't let you help. What is the typical pattern
of someone who's in a pattern of failure and they're not going to change? And you try to approach them with some wisdom. Again, I'm just, you know, assuming you've got wisdom and they don't. They may have wisdom and you don't. But let's just assume here you've got the solution and they're going down a bad path and you care about them. What's the typical pattern for somebody who's not going to take advice?
How about this one?
Anger. See, if I need to make a change, what do I need to do, brother? I need to say, you know, maybe I'll do something differently. Maybe I need some teaching I don't have. Maybe I can be equipped. But rather than do that, what you can do is you can be angry and you can look at others and what they need to do to change. Now, you know, maybe these people that you don't need change. But one of the good things, if you're really committed to being the best person you are, even though you see these people need change, the first question you ought to ask, what do I need to do? Even my worst enemy sometimes can tell me some things I really need to hear.
But you see, I am blaming others and I withdraw from the people who can help. See, the common thing when I work with people is that you start getting this isolation, you get hurt, and you start withdrawing. Your circle of associations comes smaller and smaller and smaller, and then eventually you end up in a mess.
I'm just saying, let that be a red flag. Let that be, if you're seeing patterns like that in your life,
you may need to step back and turn to God. And first off saying, Lord, help me. Help me to have a tender heart. Help me not to be a judgeful person and live in the land of throwaway people. I stop throwing people away and won't listen to them. Here's some great verses.
Great verses. Some in the midst of adversity.
Let's just read them together. Psalms 27:7. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me and answer me. When you said, seek my face, my heart said to you, your face, Lord, will I seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not leave me nor forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take care of me. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a smooth path because of my enemies. You see, one of the things, don't ever let it come from your heart. Whenever hurt comes and you've got struggles of what to do, praise God. Worship God. Exalt God. Don't blame God.
Psalms 86:11, teach me your way, O Lord. I will walk in your truth. Untie my heart to fear your name. Unite my heart to fear your name. I will praise you, O Lord my God, with all my heart. And I will glorify your name forever. And one more verse, Psalms 119. I will run the course of your commandments. For you shall enlarge my heart. Teach me, O Lord, the way of your statutes. And I shall keep it to the end.
Remember what we said about the heart being deceptive? The Lord will lead you in a smooth way. He will enlarge your heart.
As you come to be healed by God and His ways, you're going to have more people in your life, not less.
You are going to be involved in serving others and not constantly looking at yourself.
You've got to learn how to worship. Let me talk about this. And we may not have time to completely finish today. I hope we can.
This is big. Learn who you can trust.
You know, how do you know who you can trust? Just throw this out to you. You know, one of the things I've learned in evangelism, I learned this in Lincoln, Nebraska, we had unlimited TV time. Unlimited TV time. Well, imagine that. We got all kinds of calls, and you know what? We baptized some people because they wanted to come to their house. We talked to them. We baptized them. They opened up their heart to me. And we had studies, and you know what? They lasted a few months and they quit us. And there was something that I learned in this. It's not that my effort was wrong. But people Normal people don't just open their heart to anybody all of a sudden, strangers off the street. I found out people that did that sometimes are unstable. Who do you trust? What are some criteria of people that you're willing to talk about your personal life with, that you would want to seek advice and really open up your heart to them? Anybody want to tell me what they would be like?
Someone that can keep their mouth shut to others.
Yeah. Sure.
I need to know that they would help me and not hurt me by broadcasting my weaknesses.
Yeah. Why not? That's the most foundational thing here.
Their relationship with the Lord.
Oh, yeah. You know God. Serve God. They're perfect people. They love God. But they're willing. They're, you know, they would have the characteristics of what I'm going to be like. Why not? Who do you open your heart to?
They have my best interest in mind.
What's that?
They have my best
interest. Exactly. They care about you. You know? And do you build those kind of people in your lives over time? You ought to. You ought to. Now, if you don't, and sometimes you talk this, sometimes, you know, I think as a guy, I mean, my personality type, there's a part of me, I think I can just be alone and be happy, but I know I can't. But there's a part of me sometimes, my tendency is to come into smaller groups, you know, as a guy sharing your feelings. You know, there's some uncomfortness of that. But we need others. And I'll say, you know, my go-to guy over the years was David Hartzell. Had other friends like that. Are you building those kind of people? Then number two, if you have those people and then you cast them aside, think about that, what would cause you to do that. And again, here's some of the points I want to make. Proverbs 24:6. For by wise counsel you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety. Proverbs 27:9, ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. Sometimes I've had people come to me trying to overcome addiction, trying to overcome some failure. And one of the first things I tell them, you've got to build a team of people around you you can trust. And they're go-to people that you can talk to them about anything. Because if you don't have counsel and you're in an emotional situation, you likely are not going to be seen clearly. You'll tend to overreact to things you shouldn't overreact to, and sometimes you can just lower your head and go down a path that is hurtful to you. We all need counselors. Who are they? Now, my mate is one of my counselors, one of my most precious counselors. I'm thankful to have married someone that I would absolutely trust that will tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. And, you know, that's what you need in life. That's really what you need. You don't want a bunch of yes men around you. And so that's very important. Yes.
And God tells us to bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ.
Yeah.
And we can't do that if we think we're just social friends. We got to be brothers and sisters.
That was the first bell, right? Okay. Let me show you the wrong path. Did you know that, let me show you a guy that's really emotional and a mess, and that's King Saul. You want to hear the language of an emotional person that is not seen clearly? 1 Samuel 22:8, all of you have conspired against me, and there is no one who reveals to me that my son has made a covenant with the son of Jesse, and there is no one of you who is sorry for me. And reveals to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as it is this day. You know who his son is that he's speaking of here? He's Jonathan, one of the great men of faith. Do you know who the servant is that he says that Jonathan's working with to kill him? It's David. Saul is cutting off two of his most loyal friends. But you know what? He's got a friend. Does anybody know who the best friend of Saul is? You're about to read about him right here. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who had set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse going to Nob to Abimelech, the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him, gave him provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath, the Philistine. What's he doing? He's stirring him up. Here his friend says, yeah, you're right. He's going against you. And look what the priest of Nob did. You know what Saul does next to the priest of Nob? You remember Bible history? He slaughters them. I pray you don't get friends like that. By the way, did you know there's an entire psalm written about Doeg? Did you know that? Here are some things not to do. Don't get you caught up in the fellowship of the miserable. Don't get caught up in a bunch of people that are just going to agree with you and your bitterness and your anger and fuel it. To the chief musician, the contemplation of David, when Doeg the Edomite went and told Saul and said to him, David has gone to the house of Abimelech. So here's the psalm. By the way, I'm giving you the actual, you know, the subtitle here. Why do you boast in evil, O mighty man? The goodness of God endures continually. Your tongue devises destruction like a sharp razor, working deceitfully. You love evil more than good, lying rather than speaking righteousness. You love all devouring words, you deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy you forever. He shall take you away and pluck you out of your dwelling place and uproot you from the land of the living. The righteous shall also see and fear and shall laugh at him, saying, he is the man who did not make God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his riches. Anyway, I think our time is up. But these are critical elements when we deal with hurt. Wisdom here. Pray for God for all of us that we can follow His ways. Thank you for your attention. We'll pick up a new outline next week.